Hello and welcome to the Daily Reprieve, where we provide SA speaker meetings, workshops, and conferences in podcast format. We are an ad-free podcast. If you enjoy listening, please help us be self-supporting by going to donate.thedailyreprieve.com and drop a dollar or two into the virtual basket. Please consider donating monthly by clicking the Donate Monthly button. However, one-time donations are always welcome. Just click the Donate Now button. Now, without further ado, this episode of The Daily Reprieve. And Donald Brent,
floor is yours. Thank you very much. I'm Brendan, I'm a sexaholic. And today we're talking about the fourth step. And for me, the fourth step has been fundamental to recovery. It's the first piece of action that I take in the program, really. Up until then, it's just been a matter of accepting that I'm powerless and my life is unmanageable, and coming to believe that there's a power greater than myself that can restore me to sanity, and then making a decision to turn the will and power over to that higher power to take care of my, to take care of me. And once I've done that third step, it says next, we start on an inventory that we have to start immediately. And interesting, like throughout the book, every time you finish a step, it immediately tells you, like, sort of, we immediately go on to the next one. We don't hang around. We don't say, oh, that was great. You know, I'm sort of done the third step. Now I'll hang around for a while. It's, no, it's like immediately I have to get on. When I first came into recovery, I was in another program. When I got through those first three steps pretty quickly, actually on the third step, as I said last week, I felt, how would I know if I'd had made this decision? And I was really scared that if I didn't do something, that my addiction would take off again. And so I got really active on the fourth step. And I didn't have much guidance from anybody else. Somebody gave me a Hazelden guide eventually to look at and to start writing out. And I got Joe and Charlie, the tapes, from very well-known tapes. And I started listening to them and going through the book. And there's about 9 recordings of Joe and Charlie. And on the 7th and 8th, I think, is where they're really getting into the fourth step. And I listened to that over and over and over again to try to find out what it was. I wanted to find out what it is I was supposed to be doing. And they had a very structured way of doing the fourth step. And it was done in various columns. And, you know, they did it column by column, not across the page. The thinking was that if you did it across the page, you'd never get it finished. And I think that's probably true if you do it that way. And I wrote reams on it and looked in to sort of see. You know, I knew that the problem was in me, and that just going to meetings wasn't going to keep me sober. So I started in, and I got very, I mean, I would say I was pretty obsessive about it, and wrote it out in great detail. You know, and it was helpful to me. I remember when I got to give away my fourth step, it was, you know, there was a great release. But doing the fourth step was difficult. And you know, we hear this and people get scared of it. When I say it was difficult in that I had to take the time and I had to be prepared to be honest with myself. You know, the start of the big book, it says, or the start of the chapter into action, it says, rarely have we seen a person fail who has thoroughly followed our path. Thoroughly. Those that do not are people who cannot or are constitutionally incapable of being honest with themselves. And I decided I needed to be very, very honest with myself. I needed to find out what it was in me that was, you know, that was the problem. I had stopped thinking that it was outside of me. I thought, you know, and the thing about it is if the problem is outside of me, I'm in real trouble, because my capacity to change the world or to change the people around me and get them to act in the way that I need for me to be okay is very, very limited. And so if I'm waiting on somebody else to change, really I'm at their mercy if they don't change, I have a problem. And I used to hate the line that people used to say, you know, if there's been a problem or if you've had a difficulty with anybody or such, you know, you have to look at your partner. What do you have to do? And I used to really, really dislike that. But I found that in doing inventory, it explains to us that, you know, most people just go through those first three columns that are in the big book, you know, sort of who was the person or institution, what happened, and how did it affect me? You know, and I say, oh, look, it affected me. It affected my personal relations and my sex relations. It affected my financial security and my emotional security, etc. They say most people stop there, you know, and they remain victims. And as long as I remain a victim, as long as I've been wronged by others, I'll never be free of this. Step four it's about freedom. It's about getting to the stage. I need to go through this step four and I need to find out what are the things in me which are holding me back. It's not one of the things in me that make me a bad person, because I'm not a bad person getting good, as they say. I'm a sick person getting well. And I have to find out what is the sickness. And they tell me that the root of my, in step three, it told me that the root of my problem is selfishness, self-centeredness. And it wasn't until I sat down and I wrote a very detailed fourth step that I started to be able to see that selfishness. Because it says, you know, that the, you know, we do that inventory. We do the first three columns. And the first thing that becomes apparent is that people have treated us badly and that we have all these various different resentments and wrongs and whatever. And then it says, you know, we go back to the inventory because the key to our freedom lies in this. Putting aside what others have done, we now look at what were our mistakes. And that's the key to me getting freedom. Is starting to see my own mistakes. I used to think that, you know, I played life pretty well. You know, if I wanted something, I got it. If people didn't give it to me, I'd turn, you know, nasty. I'd be really pressuring. I'd threaten legal action. I'd do all sorts of things till people would sort of do what I wanted them to do. And I thought that then I would be thinking, you know, if you'd just given it to me when I asked you in the first place, I wouldn't have to get nasty. So you were responsible for me becoming this insistent person, this person who was prepared to go to any lengths to convince people to give me what I wanted. Because if you just gave it to me when I asked you in the first place, we wouldn't have had this problem and I wouldn't have had to be nasty. So I couldn't even sort of see that this was a sort of, you know, any kind of misbehavior on my part. It was the other person who was to blame, because if I wanted something, then I had a right to it. And all you had to do was give it to me and everything would be hunky-dory. And, you know, if you go through life like that, you're going to step on a lot of toes. And I stepped on a lot of toes. And, you know, I wasn't a callous person, I thought, but I was insensitive. I was inconsiderate of what this might mean for other people. But I just had to have what I needed, because otherwise I couldn't be comfortable. And if I wasn't comfortable, then, you know, life was intolerable. I've done the fourth step in many different ways. And there's ways that I've heard of that I haven't done it in. I've written, as I said, the first one I wrote extensively and very, very detailed and, you know, minuscule writing, you know, filling the page out, and every page of it was just packed full of information. And when I came into SA, I worked with a sponsor who was working with the way of doing the fourth step, which was the way they were doing it in Cleveland back at the early days of Alcoholics Anonymous. And it was about identifying feelings and identifying my feelings about whatever had happened. And it's interesting, I just decided to take a look at the white book just before we started, you know, in the way it approaches the fourth step there. And what it actually says is that they talk about how the fourth step might be done. And it says one way, this is in page 109 of the White Book, one way to go about it is to take up one at a time any person or incident we have bad feelings about, describing the feelings we had at the time and examining them. We then ask ourselves what we did wrong or how our attitude was wrong. That's one way. Also, the way it also refers to the way that it's done in the Big Book. And it says, no one has ever taken the perfect or complete fourth. And many of us have found great value in doing it again in later stages of growth and awareness. I've done many fourth steps. I mean, I may have done eight. I've done it in three different fellowships. I've applied it in different aspects. I've done fourth steps just about my finances. I've done fourth steps, which, you know, focus in just on resentments to individuals. And sometimes I've done mini inventories, which might be considered 10-step inventories or whatever, but I've done them along the format that I've applied with the fourth step. And I find in this that what it does is if I do a good fourth step, I will be able to identify where my actions may have harmed other people. And this is going to be really important to me when I do my eighth step, because in my eighth step, I'm going to be identifying what are the amends that I mean to make to people. The fourth step is going to have identified the areas in which I've been treading on other people's toes. It's going to be if I put down those mistakes. If I do it the way they were doing it in Cleveland, after I've written down, you know, the person or the institution, you know, that has caused me some pain or that has, you know, had a positive impact at times, but then I'll put down what happened and then I'll put down the feelings. And then after I've written down the feelings, I'll be able to start to identify the defects that are associated with that. And it was interesting. The fourth step done that way, my sponsor had me do it that way. And there was just four sections from the ages 0 to 5. 6 to 12, 13 to 19, and then 20 until whatever age the person is. And just four pages. And he said, you can't write any more than those four pages. And you can't put things for year when you were 10 onto the one of 0 to 5, because 0 to 5 will probably, you know, you probably won't fill out those pages pretty much at all. Whereas the other ones would be pretty well complete. And I did it that way. And I, you know, identified the feelings. And when I wrote it, I wrote out all the feelings, all the things I thought were feelings, you know, like sort of, I felt unloved and I felt abandoned and I, you know, and I felt anger and grief and all these various different things. I did it that way a number of times. And my sponsor kept saying, Brendan, you're talking about a lot of stuff there, which are not feelings. They're thoughts. You know, when I say I feel unloved, what's really happening is I'm thinking that I'm unloved and I'm saying that's a feeling. But he said that there's really about 7 or 8 feelings. There's fear and anger and pain and guilt and shame and joy, excitement, and feeling numb. And, you know, those are physical feelings. And he tried to get me more and more to focus in on the actual feeling that was associated with what happened as opposed to the thoughts. And that, you know, that was beneficial to me when I eventually got my head around it, because I could actually ask myself, I could sense the feeling. I could sense that I was uncomfortable in my stomach or in my chest if I had anxiety.
Like many times.
Thank you. And when I could identify the physical sensation, say, that's anxiety. Okay, so I'm saying I feel unloved, but what I'm really feeling is anxiety, or I'm feeling sadness. That's another one. Sadness. You know, when I can break it down to that and say, okay, I'm feeling this, And I, these thoughts are associated with it, but the feeling is particularly one of this. I said, well, if I'm anxious, what do I need to do in relation to that anxiety? The fourth step is, you know, it's one that a lot of people seemingly, they balk at the fourth step. They don't get through it. And I've seen a situation where we've been doing the work as a, in a group, and there was somebody with, oh, he had about 15 years of sobriety, and he could not write his fourth step because he ended up working with somebody else, and they just ended up talking about how terribly he'd been treated as a child. And he actually left the program after that. Well, he actually lost his sobriety, and he couldn't get his sobriety back for a long time and didn't come back to the program. And I saw it again with another, with the sponsee I had. And he'd do it. He did a lot of the work, but there was one thing that he couldn't do is he couldn't see. He was never able to get to look at the mistakes that he had made in relation to his father. I mean, his father's, the harms his father had done or the wrongs that his father had done and how they'd affected him were so strongly incorporated in all of his being that he couldn't get to that stage of actually seeing where, what were the wrongs that he had done. And I remember being at a workshop on this, but run for another fellowship. And the person who was running the workshop, he said, are there people here? Is there anybody here who has got, you know, somebody that they're not prepared to make amends to? And, you know, various hands went up. And he identified that most of them were people who had been abused in their childhood. And he said, well, if we're not prepared to make amends to those people, or if we're not prepared to right the wrongs that we may have done them, because this is not a, it's not a situation of sort of weighing up what I did against what somebody else did. This is all about me being free. This is all about me being able to have a spiritual awakening, a relationship with a higher power. And if I'm not prepared to forgive somebody else, if I'm going to hold that down and sort of the, I'm not going to be able to get to that stage because I'm going to be, as they say, blocking out the sunlight of the spirit, because that resentment is always going to be there. It's always going to be clogging me up. So eventually he did manage to get the people to say that they would be prepared to pray for that person. They didn't believe that they'd be able to actually go and make an amends to them directly, but they would pray for them. And as he said, look, well, that's a form of amends. And we'll talk more about this when we talk about step 8 and 9. But it's very important. The fourth step is key, because the fourth step, we need to have a fourth step in order to be able to do the fifth step, which is which we're going to share with our sponsor and with God. You know, the basically what we're going to be focusing in on is, you know, our mistakes. What I found interesting is when I wrote it out and I looked at my mistakes, what other people had done to me, it just sort of dissipated. The level of harm that I felt had been done, and I was able to overcome a lot of my resentments. We're going to need it for the sixth step, because that's where we're going to ask, or that's where we're going to be prepared for God to take away all the defects that we've identified in the fourth step. And we're going to need it, obviously, for the seventh step, which is when we ask God to take those away. We need it for the eighth step, because, you know, we're going to, that's where we're going to identify the amends by looking at the harms that we've done to other people. And obviously then for the ninth step, for the amends, we need to have had a good fourth step to identify what those harms are. So, you know, the fourth step is the, you know, it's sort of like the main cog in these steps 4 through 9, in which we're actually going to get into the active part of changing. Because we're changing from that situation where we're the victim, we've been harmed, we're sort of this person like who has, you know, who cannot be forgiven. And we're going through this, and we're going to come to that stage where not only can we forgive others, we can forgive ourselves. And, you know, when we get to the fifth step, we get to talk about just what a release that can be. Thanks for letting me share.
Thank you very much, Brendan.
Thanks, Brendan.
Thank you, Brendan.
It's Brendan.
I would like to thank you for listening to this episode of The Daily Reprieve, the best source for experience, strength, and hope for SA members. Please subscribe to this podcast to be alerted of new episodes. Please show your support by donating to The Daily Reprieve by going to donate.thedailyreprieve.com and choosing either monthly donations or a one-time donation by clicking Donate Now. Thank you for listening, and stay tuned for the next episode of The Daily Reprieve.